Christopher Long, and you're listening to The Digital Dialogue, a podcast dedicated to cultivating the excellences of dialogue in a digital age. This is episode 26, and it is a special episode which features an interview that Jamie Oberdick, associate editor for publications at Teaching and Learning with Technology here at Penn State, did with me last December as part of a two-part article that focuses on how I'm using blogs in my philosophy classes. I want to begin by thanking Jamie for the excellent article and for allowing me to post this podcast here on The Digital Dialogue. So without further ado, here is Jamie and my interview with him in December 2009.
For Teaching and Learning with Technology at Penn State, this is Jamie Oberdick. For students in Chris Long's Socratic Politics philosophy course, class doesn't stop after they leave the classroom. In fact, the discussion and associated learning often has only just begun during class in the physical classroom and continues all hours of the day and night. Long, associate professor of philosophy and new dean of undergraduate studies with the College of Liberal Arts, makes this possible due to a course blog called Socratic Politics and Digital Dialogue. It has replaced many of the more traditional writing assignments in this class, and writing posts and comments in the blog is part of the student's rubric for grading. The blog is an educational tool that Long uses to enhance learning and stimulate discussion for his course. He has also found it goes a few steps further. For starters, the blog allows discussions on course concepts to continue well after the end of a class period. Long has also found that students take the discussion in some exciting directions, including discourse on ideas that go beyond what is covered in class. It even influences what Long talks about during classroom time. He has discovered that what is really happening in the blog is the cultivation of a learning community that blurs boundaries. The blog has even attracted the attention of a colleague at Boston College who teaches a similar course. Long invited her and her students to post and comment as well, creating an idea and learning exchange that both have found very exciting. To hear more about this groundbreaking educational technology project, I sat down with Long to find out more about the incredible educational possibilities to be found in course blogs.
Chris, how did you get involved using blogs for your courses, and where did you get the idea?
Well, I have a neighbor, Jim Leas, who lives right across the street from me, and he works here at Penn State, and he works in the computer in the IT area. And so we were talking, our kids were playing, and we were talking about my interest in technology and how I might be able to use some of the new technologies to engage students actively in their own education. And I had done some blogging before at Stockton College, where I taught philosophy before I came to Penn State. I was already interested in blogging and what we might do with blogging. And so Jim Leas put me in contact with Cole Camplese at Teaching and Learning with Technology here at Penn State. And this was, I think, in August, and 1 year, about 4 years ago. And I we started just talking about blogging, and I told him I was interested in using this in my courses. And he was saying, well, we're just about to start a new initiative, a Blogs at Penn State initiative. Mm-hmm. So they set me up with a WordPress blog, and I said, well, I'll try it right now in my class, and this next semester. So I did some juggling and got it built into my class. And at that time, it really was sort of just a digital place to post assignments. It was one blog for the whole course, right? Rather than having each student have their own blogs, it was our course blog. I gave them assignments, and they wrote their assignments in the blog. Sure. So it wasn't very innovative at the time, and I was struggling at that point with sort of what is the added value that this technology is giving me, mm-hmm. because I'm really a firm believer in the fact that the technology should be used to add value to education rather than just be something that we do because it's new or interesting. Right? I mean, we may need to test things out and try them out,
sure.
but it's really the question is, can we add value to our education? What are the pedagogical practices that technology can support?
Okay. Now, what are some general pedagogical principles behind using blogs in class?
Well, some of the pedagogical principles that underlie what I do with the technology in my classroom are, first, I want to engage students actively in their own education. I want to empower them to be participants in the educational process. And how can I use blogging or podcasting or any of these other technologies to do that? That's really the my primary interest in technology is to get them to buy into what we're doing in the classroom. So that's the first principle that's underlying everything. Get students engaged in their own education.
Right.
The other, though, principle that I find critical is the recognition that learning happens in community, and it's basically a social activity. And so how can I use social media to cultivate communities of learning around the content that I'm interested in? Right. So I teach courses in ancient Greek philosophy, my area of expertise, ancient Greek philosophy. And so we're reading texts, ancient texts. But how can I use those texts to generate communities around the concepts that I want them to be thinking about? I think that the issues that were raised in Platonic texts are timeless, and they are related to what it means to be human. And so if I can get students thinking and talking and reflecting and engaging with one another and with a broader world through these digital media, then that's a success for me. The other point that I think I would make in this regard is that the technologies, particularly blogging, allows us to blur a lot of traditional boundaries. Boundaries between in class and out of class. Students, this blog is always there, it's always alive, it's always ready to be engaged, and so that can blur those boundaries.
How are you using these blogs? You touched on it a little bit, but how are you using them?
Well, the way I after some time of testing and trying different things, the way I use the blogs now in these last few classes I've done is to take a kind of single blog format. Namely, we are blogging together as a core, as a class. So we are all co-authoring a single document, sort of the vision that I have of this. One other way of doing it would be to have each student blogging on their own blog, and then we aggregate the content. And I found that that's been problematic because it doesn't really generate the back and forth, the dialogical dimension of the discussion that I would like. And I would say that's also one of the main pedagogical principles that I have is encouraging genuine dialogue in the classroom and on the blog and through the various digital media. I was finding that each student having her or his own blog wasn't really doing that for me. So then I thought, well, let's let all the students be co-authors. Let them post to the blog as well as comment, and let them take ownership of this document, this living document that we have. So that was one thing that I did. The second thing, and I think this has been a critical thing, was I took the reins off of the specific assignments. So for a long time, I would say, okay, I need to assign 3 or 4 papers in this class. We need a paper on Plato. We need a paper on Aristotle. We need a paper on, you know, maybe the pre-Socratics or something like that. And I'd make an assignment, and then they would write about it. I decided, no, let's get rid of the assignments, the specific assignments. We're going to run it with a rubric. And the idea is to cultivate an ongoing critical reflection in writing on the material that we're reading. So all the writing that they do in the course is through the blog. Except for the final paper, they're doing a final traditional research capstone kind of paper. But the idea is that students should be posting frequently on the material that we're reading, and they should be engaged with the material that way. So I don't say you need to make 3 posts a week or 2 comments, and I'm not counting comments and posts. What I do say is, in the rubric, an A is consistent, substantive engagement with the material online. So whether that be through a post, through follow-up comments, all of that is part of it. And then I review and give feedback 3 or 4 times a semester, just as I would grade 3 or 4 papers. I look at all of their online work, and I grade them that way. And that way I can reinforce the principles of the rubric, like clear writing. So all the writing skills I normally would want, I'm insisting be present in the blog. So we sort of make a distinction between a post, which has to be much more substantive and organized, and maybe comments which could involve a little bit more colloquial back and forth, because we want to cultivate dialogue around the material we are doing, are thinking about. The other thing, and of course, they are allowed to blog about the reading. They're encouraged to blog about the reading. What we talk about in class is fair game for blogging. How what we talk about in class or what we're reading relate to contemporary social political events, that's always, that's part of the rubric, that's part of something, you know, we encourage them to do in the classroom. So, you know, again, there's another boundary that gets blurred, right? The real living political, social political world and the philosophical ideas we're talking about in class. So the idea is to also make philosophy relevant to what's happening in the real world.
Okay.
One other point about that one other component of the way I'm using the blog this semester is that I have students doing podcasting. And so what I decided to do was two or three students a week do a group project. They do a weekly roundup podcast. And so what they do with that is they take a look at what we've talked about during the week. They distill it to what they think are the most important points. And then they highlight, you know, points about class discussion or blog posts they thought were really interesting or something that's happening in contemporary culture that they thought was interesting. And so what you get then is kind of a feedback on the blog and on the written work in the podcast. Not only that, we have a living, again, sort of week-by-week summary of what we've done in the class. So I'm really looking forward to going back to those and listening to them and students having those accessible after the semester to go listen to them. And they've actually been really pretty interesting to see what they've done with that.
Now, are blogs replacing something in your class, like an activity, or are they a supplement to other activities?
Well, in my class, blogs are replacing something. Blogs are replacing the traditional writing assignment where a student writes a paper for a professor and hands it to that professor. The professor corrects it and hands it back to the student, and the student may or may not read the comments on the paper or not. It's replacing the writing in my course. Except for the final research paper, it's all blogging. But what it is giving me for that is, first of all, the students are not writing any longer for one person. They're writing for one another, for a wider public. It's really an infinite audience they're writing for. And then I find that they're much more willing to and eager to correct issues that I direct them to. So I usually use email to go behind the blog to if I find typos or if I find, you know, I'm okay with typos and comments and things, but, you know, in the posts I want them to be relatively polished. If I find factual errors or anything, I try to give them an email behind the scenes and say, hey, you know, can you, you know, check on that because this is either wrong or something. So I still retain that level of control. But I find that the students almost immediately go in there and correct things because they know that this is them on there and it's their colleagues that are also reading it and the wider public. So they correct things. So I'm finding it a lot more effective as a teaching tool to get them to think about how they're writing in reflective ways, but also they're able to learn to respond more quickly and more thoughtfully to criticism, whether it come from me or their colleagues. And it's interesting to see that as they get comments on their blog posts, they respond and also defend themselves. And so you get to see kind of the living growth of their ability to argue about the concepts I'm interested in. The other thing that it's doing for me and the way I've been using it in the last few semesters is I use it to teach from. So my preparation for teaching used to be okay, today is Thursday, September, whatever, and I need to do my lecture on Socrates' argument with Gorgias in the dialogue, The Gorgias. So I have these points I want to make, and so I can go in and we're going to talk about that. Hopefully they've read it. I don't know. Well, now I use the blog, and my preparation involves reading what people have posted to this point, and then in Classroom the blog is up there on the screen, and I have I use a little program called Evernote, and I've already made links to the specific posts or comments I want to highlight, and I'm sitting on the computer and I'm saying, well, let's talk about this point that you made. And I call on a student, and I use it strategically to call on students who maybe don't talk often in class. And can you summarize what you said? And I call their post up there. And I know that there's a point in that post that I would have wanted to emphasize in my lecture anyway. So I'm trying to use it dynamically to reinforce positive blog posts. This is another way for me to give feedback to students. Rather than, correcting a paper to hand it to them, I can give feedback, positive reinforcement by highlighting specific blog posts in class. And I think there's a kind of competitive thing that gets going among students, like, can I get my post up there? And it's also competitive on my part because if a student will mention something that they posted about, I pride myself on being able to, remember where that is and get to it relatively quickly if I had to do a quick search in the blog or something and bring it right up. And we have a good time with it. I mean, that's something that I think sometimes can get missed. A lot of this is really fun. I mean, the students, when you see the students get into the blogging, and you get to know them on a level that you wouldn't know them on, because you know that this student almost always is bringing up, let's say the question about God and the existence of God or something. There's these internal jokes that sort of start coming in to the class, and the classroom becomes a community. And before class, you hear them talking to each other. They know each other a little bit. So it's clear that when it's working right, the blog is cultivating a community of learning around the material that I want them to be focusing on. And then you have things that are really remarkable, like students who are stuck on a train because there was a delay somewhere. They get on my blog and they start posting about what it means to be late and the question of responsibility and all these things which I didn't anticipate we would be talking about as a theme in this class. But yes, they're in the text, and let's think about them. I find that I'm learning a lot more than I ever would have learned as a faculty member because I'm a part of this community, and some of these issues are coming up organically from the text. And so this is part of, my larger interest in using these technologies to do real scholarship, to open up ideas in ways that we wouldn't otherwise do.
Why is this so effective in your class and in other instances in education? Yeah. Why are blogs so effective?
Well, I think blogs are effective to the degree to which one implements them in a specific kind of way. So I don't think a blog is particularly effective if it is just an electronic medium for doing education the way we've always done education, or the way is this sort of, top-down, pouring information into empty vessels kind of model of education. But if you can think of the blog as a way of cultivating a community of learning around the material you want to focus on, be it in history or in science or in whatever, I teach philosophy, and I think philosophy lends itself in some ways to doing some of these things because the skills I want them to learn are critical thinking, critical writing. I want to give them an international or global kind of perspective. I want them to think about ethical issues that are involved in the things that we read. So I think philosophy does lend itself to this, but I think it can be used across the board. But it does depend on how it's implemented. I think faculty have to do a lot of thinking about loosening the reins on a certain kind of control. What happens when you open up a blog community in the kind of way that I'm suggesting, namely without specific assignments, but with a rubric that holds students accountable and lays out clear expectations? Then you also have to recognize that, the course is going to move in certain ways based on the students who are involved. For example, this semester, the issue of piety really is a theme in this course. And it was not a theme for me when I was considering what we were going to be talking about. It's clearly a theme in the dialogues. And so it makes perfect sense that it's come as a theme in the course. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means I, as a faculty member, have to go back and reread these things with new eyes, look at the scholarship in the question of piety in the dialogues, which I hadn't necessarily looked as thoroughly into as I might otherwise have. And so you're beginning to see how the circle really becomes closed, and in a certain sense, education becomes reciprocal. And then I'm reminded of why I got into education in the first place, because I love to learn. And I love to talk with students and to talk with people about the ideas that we're focusing on. So a lot of people I talk to about this, isn't this a lot of work? Isn't it just overwhelming? It's a lot of work, but it's so rewarding you don't even think of it as work in a certain way. I'm constantly reading comments on my iPhone, on my computer. They're being delivered to me wherever I am. So I'm always reading what my students are writing. I'm not myself posting all that much on the blog in relation to the course material. When I post, there's a few comments. When they post, there's multiple comments. There are so many comments that they have to start another post to deal with, you know, where the conversation has gone. So that's just, to see that happening, to see that grow is so rewarding as a faculty member. It's just, it's remarkable.
Now, talk about how your students are really latching on this. Your students, do they like this? And also, are they finding it effective as far as a learning tool, the blogs?
Yeah, I think, well, in terms of how the students are responding to the blog, I don't know that students are used to dealing with a faculty member who says, you have to write consistently, regularly, in a substantive way throughout the semester, but I'm not going to tell you how many posts that means or how many comments that means. They want to know how many. They're killing me. They want to know the number. If I do this many, will I get this grade? And I keep saying, well, I have a column which is in the good column of the rubric, and I say 2 to 3 posts a week. That's good, right? If you want an A, just take that as the model. Do more than that. I don't want students posting just to put posts. I don't want them counting posts. One really good post is great. And I'm going to, as I evaluate their work, I will be looking at the quality of their writing, and I can give them feedback in the course of the semester about that. A lot of students, when you offer this to them, they really take to it. They say, this is great. I'm going to, you know, really get engaged. So I have a core of students in this class who have really taken ownership of this of the blog. And it's been just wonderful to see them take to it. And they talk to each other, and they really like it. Now, I do know that there are other students, and I probably lost some students in this class, who just can't deal with the public nature of the blog, and also the fact that they are not being assigned to something at a specific time, a specific date, because what ends up happening with them is they can't manage their time in such a way that they can do this consistently over the long semester, right? Consistently be engaged on the blog. Part of the problem is, as happens in every semester, is other courses start coming. You know, everybody has a midterm. Everybody has another paper due. Papers are due over the course of the semester. So when papers are due, you can see a slowdown in a number of posts and things. But what's actually happening is that it picks up again, first of all. And second of all, when I have my periods of evaluation in the course, namely these four periods where I say, okay, evaluation period's coming, I'm going to look back at what you've done. Of course, then things also sometimes pick up. But what I found in this course is that when it really takes, they are consistently blogging throughout the semester. One of the goals of my course is cultivate the habit of blogging, by which I mean the habit of critically reflecting in writing, in public, on your experiences, particularly on the reading that you're doing. But I also would like to open it up to other experiences and how the reading is helping them understand their lives in that way.
Outside of Penn State, I understand that there's somebody from outside of Penn State collaborating with you on that. Could you please talk about that a little bit? That's very interesting.
So one of the things that I'm really excited about is that the blog format allows us to blur boundaries, as I've mentioned. Right. One of the boundaries I already talked about is the boundary between the classroom and the rest of the world. But one of the things I see as powerful is the boundary between institutions. So I have a colleague from the Ancient Philosophy Society, which is a society I'm a member of, and she does ancient Greek philosophy, and she teaches at Boston College. Her name's Marina McCoy. We're Facebook friends, and I saw one day that she just updated her status to say, very excited to teach the Phaedrus today. Well, we were doing the Phaedrus in class. So I gave her a Facebook email, and I said, we're doing the Phaedrus this week, too. Check out the blog, and wouldn't it be great if our students talked to each other? And she just took that and really ran with it. So she actually assigned her students to comment on our blog. And when she did that, it occurred to me, well, wait a minute. Why don't we give her the power to post on our blog? So I worked with the people at TLT. Brad Kozlik's been great in trying to help me think about what this blogging platform is going to do for us in education. And I said, look, this is great. Here's somebody from another institution, Boston College. She's a professor there. She wants to. She's got her students commenting on my students' work and on our course blog. Let's give her the ability to blog, to post. So he said, yeah, and we worked it out. She posted some things, and her students responded to her post. My students responded to her post. And now all of a sudden, we have two classrooms in two different parts of the country with two different kinds of students talking about these texts that we both consider really important. We're getting her perspective. They're getting my perspective. She and I are talking a little bit on about different readings of these texts. So they're seeing sort of a higher level also of discussion there, and also how genuine dialogue can be performed using this digital media that's respectful, even if there's differences of opinion and differences of interpretation. So one of the nice things about having a group of Boston College students come into our blog was, as I said, the question of piety was a question for Socrates in these dialogues. Well, here we now have a whole group of Catholic students from a Catholic school, not all Catholic students, but students from a Catholic school, interacting with our Penn State students, some of whom have religious beliefs. Others are adamantly, you know, agnostic or secular and other kinds of positions on it. And now they're really talking to each other. And so you really begin to see a whole other range of possibilities for some of these texts emerge in ways that I just wouldn't have anticipated. And you wouldn't have been able to do without this digital media.
Right, right. Now, what's next for this project? What's the future of this?
Well, in terms of thinking about the future of this project, well, let me say one thing about the past of it. I was a summer faculty fellow at Teaching and Learning with Technology, and that really was a transformative experience for me. To see what the people in TLT at Penn State are doing when you have people who are sort of living in this digital medium, the possibilities that open in that regard are really very powerful. And so what I saw there was that this idea that you can use these digital media to cultivate communities, not only in the classroom, communities of learning about what we're doing in the classroom, but communities around what we're doing in a larger sense at the university, namely around education. And so what's next for the project is I am now the Associate Dean for Undergraduate Studies here at the College of Liberal Arts. And I am very interested in using social media technology to cultivate communities of education around the activities that we do here in the College of Liberal Arts. The outgoing Associate Dean for Undergraduate Studies, Jack Seltzer, has started a really wonderful program called the Paternos Fellow Program. It's a way for us to bring in excellent honor students into the College of Liberal Arts and to ask them to aspire to do the work that would allow them to be honor students. And we bring in a larger group of students who want to aspire to be Paterno Fellows. And then as they jump through the hoops that they need to jump through and achieve at the level we expect them to achieve, they earn their way into the Fellows program. It's a really exciting program. And so one of the ways that I'm thinking about using digital media in this regard is to have, for example, some student blogs around some of the areas that we're working in here in the College of Liberal Arts. So students who are studying abroad, blogging about study abroad. Students who are in the Paterno Fellows program, give them microphones and flip videos and have them cover the events that we have for them in the Paterno Fellows. Interview speakers, interview students, post those in YouTube and bring them into the blog. And so the idea is to use this digital media technology to express the dynamic community that's already happening here in the College of Liberal Arts and to reinforce it. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to think about how these digital media technologies can be used on it from an administrative perspective to cultivate these communities and not have all of the information being sort of from top down, but actually empowering students to put words to their undergraduate experience, which is really transformative. I mean, my own undergraduate experience was the most transformative experience of my life. It made me into the person that I am. And if we can give these students the capacity to think reflectively and to write reflectively and to produce videos and podcasts and other things around their experiences, we really have a way of showcasing what we do here in the College of Liberal Arts, but also of drawing others into the community, whether they be alumni, whether they be administrators, and of course faculty. So my goal really with this is to try to use social media to highlight what we're already doing in the College of Liberal Arts, but also to cultivate a community of education and a dynamic one that reflects all the values, all the traditional values of the College of Liberal Arts: ethical leadership, global perspectives, right, critical thinking and writing. All of those are traditional liberal arts values, but we need to think about how they get translated into a digital era.
Now, anything else you'd like to add?
Does that say, I did gesture to the Teaching and Learning with Technology Fellowship, but I want to really express my thanks for all the work that everyone at TLT does. Cole Campese has been really a great leader in that area, and he's been someone who's really shown me the possibilities that these technologies can open for us. And Ryan Wetzel and Alan Gorky and Matt Meyer, who are my team for my faculty fellowship, they really lent me the courage to do the Digital Dialogue podcast, which is a part of a larger project by which I'm attempting to do scholarship, philosophical scholarship, in a more public way by using these digital media technologies. So it really was a wonderful experience being a faculty fellow, and I'm hoping that I can take what I learned over the summer and translate it into something that can be really transformative for not only my career, but for the institution here at Penn State.
For Teaching and Learning with Technology, this is Jamie Oberdick. Thanks for listening.